If you pulled five books from your shelf that you loved and you read the first page and you read the last page, you would see that they come together. The first page is the promise. The last page is the delivery of that promise.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential.
Carrie Knowles is the author of 8 books, 4 novels, and 4 nonfiction. She also pens a regular column for Psychology Today called Shifting Forward, A Wanderer's Musings. Carrie was named the Piedmont Laureate for Short Fiction in 2014. Her short stories have won more than 25 awards, including the Village Advocate Fiction Contest, the Blumenthal Writers and Readers Series, the North Carolina Writers Network Fiction Syndication, and Glimmer Train's Very Short Fiction Competition. She has been named a finalist in the Glimmer Train competitions 6 times and was also a finalist in the Doris Betts Fiction Contest and received an honorable mention in the National Literary Arts.
And I'm here with Carrie Knowles, and I'm very excited because Carrie is a prolific writer and author. I have here, you're the author of 8 books, 4 novels, and 4 nonfiction books. Plus, you write a column for Psychology Today.
Yes.
Wow. So, and I know that you have a lot of wisdom to share about the writing industry, how to get published in global publications, how to tips for how to get the stories from our heads onto paper. So I'm really excited to get into all of that stuff. But Carrie, I was wondering maybe if you could start off by telling us, when did you first know you were a writer?
That's a very good question. And I'll give an answer that most people won't give. And that is my parents didn't have very much money, and they didn't have the money to send me to school. And so I had to pay for my own way through college. And I started writing jingles for WXYZ Radio when I was a freshman in college. And then I went on to do some other writing. And then my last 2 years of college, I wrote for a sports magazine called Competitive Breed in Michigan. And I covered drag car races, speedboat races, motorcycle races, and snowmobile things. And so I would leave school on Friday afternoon, and I would travel with an engineer, with a mechanic basically, and a photographer, and sometimes my editor. And let me just say that they were very reluctant. This was 1969. They were very reluctant to hire a woman. And I said, okay, I saw the advertisement. And I thought, well, I can do that. And so I said, look, I went to them and I said, I'll write 2 articles for free. And if you publish them, you have to hire me. And if you don't, that's fine. Mm. And then nobody's, no file, no play, so it's, let's do this. And so anyway, I wound up writing for them, and I would leave school on Friday afternoon, and I would cover all these races with the mechanic. And then I would come home Sunday night, and I would stay up all night, and I would write all my copy. And I would call the mechanic and say, did I say this right? Help me with the combustion engine, blah, blah, blah. And at that time I was in Detroit. At that time, there were very interesting things going on with various engineers from all the different, like Buick and Chevrolet and Cadillac. Those engineers, for fun, would get together, even though they were competitors, they would get together and they would build speedboats, or they would work on a drag car, or they would make something different. So it was like a really interesting time for that kind of thing. And then I would write all my copy, I would turn it in on Monday morning, and I would go to school. And then Friday, I would leave and do the same thing again. So it's not the typical answer. So I left school and I had a degree in creative writing, which was nice. And, I had a double degree and I began to be a freelance writer because I liked it. I knew how to do it. I went from there and worked for the Detroit News. And then I left there and I went to Chicago and I wrote there and I did a lot of advertising copywriting. And I spent many years doing advertising copywriting and a little bit of short story writing on the side. Mm-hmm. But I made a lot of money. And I tell people, you know, don't shy away from commercial work because, for one thing, it'll teach you something. You know, writing for a sports magazine taught me a lot about a world I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And I think writers are just basically curious people. And, you know, I did a lot of writing about, about commercial things. I did a lot of, annual reports. I did a lot of writing about real estate. And right. Then I started writing about food because one day it was Thursday and that was the day in Raleigh with the News and Observer where they did food. And we had three kids and I'm sitting at the breakfast table and I'm reading this article about food. And I thought to myself, there are thousands of women doing exactly what I'm doing. They're sitting at the breakfast table, and it may be the first time that they've had all week to sit and read something. And they could excuse themselves reading about it because they could get recipes and this and that. And the article wasn't that good. And I thought to myself, I can write better articles than that. Huh. And women ought to be able to have a chance. If that's all they're going to read during the week, I want them to have something good to read. So I started writing about food, and I like food. I'm a pretty good cook. I became a better cook. I went on to become a restaurant critic for four or five different magazines and newspapers. And, and I wrote about food. For a while, I was the only freelancer that Better Homes and Gardens hired. And I wrote for them. And, it's like one door opens, another mm-hmm. door opens, yeah. another door opens. And, you know, I think that the answer that anybody who really wants to write is, yes, I can do that. Right. If you don't do your research, let me just get a plug here. Don't do your research on the internet. Go to some original source. Go to the library. Make friends. If you don't know the first name of the librarian you're working with, you're not really a writer. You know, you're not really doing what you need to be doing. And we get fooled by how easy this is. It's like click, 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 you know, and you can then go on the internet. And some of the information is true. Some of the information is not true. And your job as a writer is to be as truthful as possible and as authentic as possible because you're writing, you are providing information for other people. And I think it's really important to say that, to be honest about it and say, I'm good. If I write it, you can trust it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that's yeah. kind of how I built a career is if I wrote about it, you could trust that it was right.
So I think one of the most, you said a lot of interesting things. One of the most interesting things, you started off writing jingles.
Yeah, I did. You know, like WXYZ. And then WXYZ at that time, they had a partial ownership of the Detroit Lions. So a lot of work that I did had to do with promotional stuff for the Detroit Lions. So it was, headline things and, ticket giveaways and whatever. And I learned a lot about the sports industry. I all of that information doesn't disappear. And I think we make a mistake. It's like, I'll do that. And then that's over. Put that in a Ziploc baggie and walk away from it. Oh, no. You do something as a writer, you may put it in that Ziploc baggie, but you file it away because that's a character. You know, that is somebody else mm-hmm. that's going to come up in your writing. Mm-hmm. That's information. It's kind of, make those connections. Don't burn your bridges and don't consider things to be throwaways. I often tell people, who want to start writing, I tell them, what is the thing that you enjoy the most? What's the passion that you have? And so let's say that it's dog grooming. Well, then my response is know as much about dog grooming as absolutely possible and start writing about that. Start a career writing about dog grooming.
So then how, if let's take it from there, Carrie. So if I want to start a career writing a dog, about dog grooming, I'm going to do a lot of research and learn all that I can. I want to become a dog grooming expert, right? So I learn all this information. I go to the library, corroborate all my sources. So how then do I start to get my writing actually published in publications?
Oh, that's easy. I mean, it's not easy, but there's a way to do it, which is you find out what are the dog magazines. There's 100 dog magazines. Come on. There's really lots of dog magazines. And there may be some little local, you know, if there's a kennel club that's local, go to the local kennel club and say, do you have a newsletter? Let me write an article about the right shampoo to use for your dog. You know, you build your portfolio from the ground up. You don't start with, you know, Guns and Gardens. You know, you start with a local, a small local publication.
Right.
You prove that you can do it. You know, what editors want to know is, can you deliver?
Yes. I think that's where a lot of writers struggle, is selling the idea.
Right.
The query. Yeah. Like, how do you, what's the, do you have any tips on how to write compelling queries?
Right. Well, yes. Short is the answer. And also, okay, let me see. Let me try to think this through. So a lot of people, they want to tell you everything.
Right.
So they start with the background information. Okay, so blah, 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 blah. And then paragraph 4 is the punchline. That's, and then I'm going to write about this, you know.
Uh-huh.
I don't need that background information. The editor doesn't want to know that background information. They want to know, what are you going to talk about? What are you going to do? What are you going to say? What's your lead line? What is your elevator pitch? You know?
So you want to start right away with the pitch.
With the pitch. Start with the pitch.
Okay.
I don't care about the stuff. You know, they don't care that you've owned 6 poodles. You know, they want to they want to know what are you going to talk about? And a little bit about, what is your authority? Why do you have any authority to do this? So first you give the pitch, then you give a little of your authority as to.
And that's where all of the research that you've done comes in handy.
Exactly.
Now, how important is it, Carrie, to have read the publications that you are pitching to?
That is the most important, because the biggest mistake people make is, particularly if they're, you know, if they're submitting to a publisher. And, you know, that's so easy. You know, you go to a publisher's website, or, you know, that's a good example to use. You go to a publisher's website and you find out what books they've published. And all of a sudden, I hear young writers do this all the time. It's like, oh, yeah, well, Random House, yeah, but they're going to love my book. And I said, well, they've never published a book like your book. So, you know, everybody has a little niche, you know, they have that little thing that's them. And if you don't understand what's them, they're not in, you know, what they want is them. They want to know that you are the right fit for them. So you need to read the publication that you need to find out, how are they packaging themselves? You know, you can't go in there and say, look, this article, you're going to love it. No problem. You know, just read it. Well, they're not going to do that, because you're going to read the first sentence and say, this doesn't fit. A lot of times people do not, it's like magazines are a good example. So not only read the articles in a magazine, look who the advertisers are.
Ooh.
Because you will see the articles and the advertisers go together. You know, they're selling advertising based on the articles that they're printing.
That's, so, I never even thought about that.
No, and nobody does. So look at who, you know, look at what kind of advertising they're selling. And, you know, that's expensive advertising. And so those advertisers are going to say, and a lot of, you know, the big magazines, they're also going to tell you, each magazine, believe it or not, has some thematic thing to it. So find out, you know, they'll tell you a year in advance what their various themes are. Why? Because they will be selling their advertising based on the themes of those magazines over the year. This is not brain surgery, you know, but it's elusive because people think, I wrote a really great short story and they're going to love it. Or I have this really great idea for better. I'm going to send it to Better Homes and Gardens because I like that magazine and they're going to want this dog grooming article. Well, they're not going to want the dog grooming article because their readers aren't. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So you need to match. You need to find out who fits you, who you best echo. And so, you know, don't make a misfit. And the other thing is it takes so much time. You know, you submit something, it may take 3 to 6 months before you hear a response.
Right, yeah.
So why waste 3 to 6 months? Find out where you're going. Find out as much about the magazine or the newspaper or the publisher that you want to send something to as you do about the subject you're writing about.
And so this is so big because I don't think a lot of people, writers even think about, well, of younger writers probably don't read magazines. But
I'll tell you a very funny story. Well, yeah. It's funny now. It wasn't funny when it happened.
Yeah.
So like I said earlier, I was the only freelancer that Better Homes and Gardens used. And it was a great gig. I mean, it was really terrific because, you know, I'd get this assignment and they paid really well. And I mean, it was just fun. And my name would be in Better Homes and Gardens. I mean, you know, like what else could I want in my life, you know? So I was just perking along, doing a couple articles for them a year. It was terrific. It was just a great little gig. And then I got a call from my editor there, and she said, she said, we just had a focus group, and she said, we discovered that our audience isn't who we thought it was. Ooh. And, you know, the age range is different than we thought, and we thought it was this, and it's something else. And she said, and then we did another focus group, and we discovered that the people who buy our magazine, they are not readers. They're lookers. So we're going to shift. We're going to get rid of these nice articles because nobody wants them. And we're going to do more pretty pictures. So I lost the job.
Oh.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yes, yes. The audience is so important.
Yes. And
yeah, I think a lot of we overlook that, especially if you're new in the game of writing. You don't really think about there are different types of audience, the intended audience, and then there's like another type of audience. But we don't ever really think about what they need or want or what they're looking for. It's kind of like what I want to write, what I want to put out, and they better like it.
Right, and that's not how it works.
Right.
But then I tell people, instead of writing for saying, oh, I'm going to write for Better Homes and Gardens or whatever, say, write what you want, write what you're passionate about, and then find the publication that matches that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, find your place in that.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
And I think with fiction and, you know, I write both fiction. I think, you know, when you said I had blah, blah, I think I have I only have 2 nonfiction books.
Uh-huh.
That's okay. You know, maybe there'll be another one. You know, actually, there will be another one. I'll have 3, and I'll have 9 books starting in May. But, and 6 of them are fiction. So, you know, if you just kind of say, I'm going to write for this audience, but it has nothing to do about your passion or what you're really interested in, that's a bad fit for you.
Right.
You want stuff you don't really want to do. Mm-hmm. This is a hard job, you know, and it's not doesn't pay that well, but it's fun and it's interesting. And you have to find your passion. What is it that you really want to spend time with? It's interesting. I only have a couple, like every writer, I only have a couple other writer friends who I can sit and talk about writing with because other people are like, are you still working on that book? And you're like, I'm doing that.
Well, can we talk a little bit about that? Because
sure.
it can take a long time to write. It can take months to write an article, let alone a book. how, and I think a lot of people struggle with things like, you know, writer's block and they can't, like, developing characters if you're doing fiction. I mean, there are so many different things that go into especially fiction. I mean, that's, to me, fiction is so intimidating because you have to think about plot. Does it make sense? Are the characters believable?
Right. Do they ring true?
Yes.
You know, would they really say that? Would they really do that? So, yeah. I'll do a plug. You should read my book about how to write, you know?
So then, Carrie, how do we, is there a way that as writers we can just kind of organize ourselves to kind of write purposefully every day to get your book done by a certain time? Or is it kind of just like this free as you go muse type?
See, since I've always made my living, this is how I made money. This is how I, you know, bought houses and, you know, paid for shoes, whatever. So one thing to understand is that it may take me, and I've been doing this a long time, it may take me 6 months to write a really good short story. Mm-hmm. So if you think about that, you think, well, how long does a book take? I have a little, my smallest book, I have them piled here with my office falling, you know, with my office being dismantled. I have a collection of short fiction called Black Tie Optional. Ashwin's Rug. It's a little book. I mean, it's like wee little. It's, I don't know how many pages it is. It's little. It's like 125, 130 pages. It's tiny. Mm-hmm. It's 10 short stories that are linked, but it's about 10 people who own the same prayer rug and how it changed their lives. It's the smallest book that I've written, and it maybe took me 5 years.
Oh my gosh.
All the pieces had to fit together. Isn't that discouraging? No, you didn't want me to say that. Okay, this just took me 15 minutes.
To 5 years.
So, yeah, and the other thing is, I mean, obviously I was working on other things. I was making money doing my little
Right, work. Right.
But it was in my head all the time, and uh-huh. I was working on it. So this book had its own problems because it's 10 linked stories about 10 different people who own the same prayer rug and how it changed their lives. So it goes over 100 years. So it goes from one person to the next person, right? Mm-hmm. So the click is, how does it get there? Mm-hmm. How does person A give it up to give it to person B? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do I get the rug to move? So I not only had to develop each character and very different, I wanted very different people with very different problems in their lives to have this rug solve their problem in some way to enrich their lives. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, I also had to have a way for the rug to move from person to person. So that was the problem. Mm-hmm. I had at one point, one of the stories is about a priest who's lost his faith, who winds up getting this rug, and this rug brings him back to his faith. And he does not want to give up this rug. He doesn't want to give it to somebody else as a gift. He doesn't want to say, here's this magic, go on with your life. So he has a death grip on this rug. It took me 6 months to figure out how to have this priest give up this rug to the next person, and who would be the next person to give it. Would you like to know how I did it?
Yes.
I killed him.
Oh my gosh. Well,
he died because he wasn't going to give it to anybody, so he had to die. I mean, so there you have it. You know, I had a character who was not cooperating with my off him, you know.
Oh my gosh.
And then she was afraid of the rug, you know, so she gave it up.
Right.
So, yeah. So, you know, books take a long time. So let me just say something about that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to understand. I had the pleasure and the honor many years ago to spend an evening with Isaac Asimov, who at that time had 30 some books in print. And anyway, he gave a small group of writers a gift of an evening with him. and who's also an Aramaic scholar and a Hebrew scholar. And he, at that time, had translated from Aramaic to English the story of Ruth. And he read us his story of Ruth, which was fabulous. But the important thing about that evening was, he said, if anybody tells you they write, sit at the machine and write for more than 4 hours a day, he said, they're lying. You can't do it for more than 4 hours a day. You know, do that kind of intensive writing because it's physically exhausting. And people are always surprised by that. But when I get people writing, they call me up and they say, wow, this is really exhausting. That's number one. Number two is my goal, which should be your goal, and remember, I've been doing this professionally for over 50 years, is if I get three pages in a day that I like enough to not erase them, that's a day's work. That's a day's work.
Mm. Wow.
Now, commercial work, I can knock out, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, but work that has passion in it, that has characters in it, that has whatever, that kind of writing is what I'm talking about. You know, if I'm doing advertising work, which I don't do that much anymore because I just decided I didn't want to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of put bread and butter on the table sort of thing. But if you're doing serious writing with characters, if you're doing a really important article, three pages is a lot. Three pages that you are willing to keep. That's the bottom line. You may write 10 pages and erase 7 of them and keep 3, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. The greatest button on this machine is that little delete button, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What an empowering button. It's like, go ahead and delete it. For the longest, when I first started writing on a computer, I was terrified. What, you know? You want me to delete something? And then I thought about all the bad copy I'd kept my whole life, and I thought, did I ever use it again? The answer was no.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
The delete button is the best thing that you've got on your computer. Everything else is just whatever.
You know? Right. Yeah. Okay. So you brought up something that I think is important, that you were juggling multiple gigs at a time. It wasn't just like, I'm working on this one book and that's the only thing I'm working on. I mean, you were doing articles at the same time you're writing your book. And
I have 3 children.
And you had 3 children. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Do you have any pets too?
Yeah, let's put that out there, you know? I did not have a wife. That was one of the other problems.
Oh.
A wife would be a very good thing to have, for every writer to have. I think every writer should have a wife, you know?
Yeah. That would help too. So you had multiple gigs and you have kids, you have family. Is having multiple gigs the key to making a career or making money, I should say, from writing? I mean, you can you work on one? I mean, I guess not. Duh, that doesn't really make sense. You can work on one book and have that be, unless you get this like super big advance before you even start writing her.
Or unless you are famous, you know, I'm not.
Right, yeah.
Unless you're famous and then some publishers like tell me, you know, whatever, you know, tell me whatever. You know, we'll give you an advance. I've only gotten one advance in my life, and it wasn't enough for me to live on, but it was nice. I liked it. I thought it was fun. But no. And the other thing, I mean, you have to be, you know, I tell people I'm the least obsessive compulsive person you've ever met. Right. And this is why it's taking me so long to move from my office. But I always hire people who are, you know, if I need help, I always hire, you know, one of my first questions almost is, so how obsessive are you? You know, I need somebody who's really on top of things like that. But it also, you know, it's I think the image of the writer who gets up in their pajamas, don't ever do that. You know, who writes in their pajamas and they have a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, and they think and they read a little bit. I think that doesn't happen anymore. I mean, I think you have to have pretty much a bundle of energy about you because, you know, the only way to really do it and make money is to, you can also lecture. I do some lecturing. I get paid for lecturing some. I know a lot of writers teach. I've taught. I find that when I'm teaching, I don't write as much because teaching takes so much out of me.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I find that I write less.
But, you know, you have to, for me, what I like doing multiple things, and it's easy for me to go from nonfiction to fiction. As you mentioned, I write a column for Psychology Today, which is a nonfiction creative nonfiction column. It's a personal perspectives column. And it's great fun. I love it. I can do that. I have a column due once a month. Sometimes if something really pressing comes up, I can do a second column in a month. But basically I have one a month to do. And so that's always perking in my head, and I may be working on a story or doing advanced work for the next book or whatever, or writing an article for somebody else. So, you mentioned, which I want to talk a little bit about, which is, when people have writer's block, and I have worked with I've coached a lot of people who have writer's block. Mm-hmm. And the issue is not to get stuck. You know, you're working on something and you do kind of you're like, what's the next word? Fine. You save and move to the next thing you're working on. I'm really good at that. You know, it's like, move it on. You know, don't just sit there and think, this is I'm gonna do about this, you know. No, just save it, put it in a file, save it, and open the next file that you need to work on.
Okay. So one cure for writer's block is to have different projects happening.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, for me it is. I mean, that may not work for everyone, but that works for me.
Right.
And, yeah. You know, I think that's really important for people to know. What I do works for me, and it works for many people I've worked with. Mm-hmm. But it also is very helpful to have. I've always had at least one or two friends who were writers, where we could sit and talk about, the mechanics or the this or what do I do about that, or let me send you a page and right. Let's talk about that.
Right.
Or to have, to have a writer's group where mm-hmm. you can read aloud. I mean, if you don't have that, the best way to sort of get a grip on what you're writing is to read it out loud yourself. You will hear the errors in it. You will hear when it doesn't ring true. You'll know, you're going, and the minute you think that, get rid of it, move mm-hmm. it on, and say to yourself, well, what would that character really say? You know, mm-hmm. How would that character sound? Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing, is you have to really know who your characters are and why they do what they do.
Mm-hmm. And that takes time.
It takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
And, I always tell people, they say, I read such and such, have you booked out? Who were you? And I say, well, let me just explain something. I will never be one of the characters in my book, because it would not ring true, because I would make myself taller, thinner, much richer than I am, you know? So, it wouldn't be an honest character. So I never use myself.
Right. Yeah. So you mentioned also that you hire help if you need it.
Yes.
What do you hire help for exactly?
Ooh, I would hire, that whole website thing. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. It's like, do I look like that's a good idea for me to do that? Don't ever ask me to do that. So, right. That whole, that tweet, I do some of my own tweeting, and the other thing is I have, what you would call, Hannah, who got in touch with you, mm-hmm. I have a PR person, and people are like, what, mm-hmm. And I'm like, I need her to call Ebony, because mm-hmm. if I call Ebony and say, wow, you're going to love me on your show because I am really dynamic and funny and smart, right. And I've got 9 books in print. You're going to go, uh-huh. But if Ebony calls you and says, man, I got this client, she's fantastic, you're going to love her on your show, you're right. probably going to have me on your show. And that's why I'm here this morning, is because of Hannah.
Right. Yeah. It does make you seem a little bit more, professional.
So, I have Hannah, and I said to Hannah, I do not want to go to bookstores. It's COVID. It's this, it's that. And I've done that, and I want to do something different. Take me on a podcast tour. And that's why I have, so Hannah does that for me.
Mm-hmm.
I've hired people to help me in my office.
Mm.
file, because maybe I don't do that.
Right.
I've hired people to proofread. Oh my goodness, you have to do that. You know, people are like, you want me to pay money to do that? And I say, yeah, pay money to do that. Get an outside reader. Don't get your cousin to do it. I don't care how smart your cousin is. Your cousin's not going to say to you, Ebony, you know that character just like me. Mm-hmm. Doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Pay somebody who doesn't love you as much as they love the money they're going to get, mm-hmm. And they're going to say, I didn't think this character worked. That's always what you're looking for. Does this work or does this not work? And mm-hmm. you want somebody who's going to tell you, this works, man, this works for me, or it didn't work for me. And when they say it didn't work for you, then you need to do this. So I've hired proofreaders. I've hired what we call beta readers, first readers to give you a read, to give you an honest feedback. Mm-hmm. I've hired copywriters. I've hired people to file for me. When things got terribly out of control, I'll hire a PR person to get me on, so.
Does all this hiring get expensive, Carrie?
Absolutely. But does it pay off? Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I was reading a book recently about entrepreneurship, and she said one of the smartest things you could do is hire people to do things for you. Even if you're like a busy mother and you need to hire someone to do your laundry so you have more time to do whatever you need to do for your business, then do that. And I thought, yeah, that makes a lot of sense because it does free up time and it helps to de-stress you because you're not worried about doing dishes or tweeting or trying to get someone to get you on the podcast if you have someone who can do that for you. And you could start off relatively cheaply. Like even if your budget is $200 a month, you can get a lot done with $200 a month. So, yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing is because so much now, all my life is on this little silly box, mm-hmm. I have a really good, I found a really good repair place. If my system goes down, I am really in trouble, mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so they know me, I know them, and I can call them and say, whoopsie doodle, I need to be up and running again by tomorrow afternoon, and something happened. I spilled a Coke on it. Forgive me, but it's gone,
Right. Yeah.
But no, you need to know, and the whole idea, of why should I know how to do all these things? And every time I turn around, there's something beyond tweet. I know that. TikTok, whatever, It's like, am I going to TikTok? You have to sort it out and go, do I need to TikTok?
Right.
No, maybe not. Right. And just Facebook, that's the other thing. Like, do I really do, and I get so tired of every time somebody, has a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich, they say, I had a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich while I was working on my book. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that to my readers, I'll let you know when something exciting is happening and we'll get over it.
Right.
There's just so many things coming at us all the time. Plus, I had to learn to Zoom. I had to buy this little thing. I had to learn that whole Zoom thing, which you've had to do also. And every time you turn around, there's a new little electronic thing. I'm a writer. Mm-hmm. I'm a writer. I'm not an IT person. Mm-hmm. I hire IT people. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to learn to be an IT person.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so there are many things that I've picked up from you today.
Good.
And I kind of want to recap them before, because we're running out of time and I feel like I'm just going on and on. An important thing you said early on is all of the stuff that you write, that you never know when that's going to come in handy later on for a character or another article or whatever. It's like you always want to – do you keep copies of everything?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. I just if you write a magazine article or you write a newspaper article, they send you what they call tear sheets. So I have all my tear sheets. Mm-hmm. Let me say that I have a small office building that I'm selling at the end of this week. And there's another writer who's been with me in the office, we have similar writing careers.
the two of us filled 5 huge recycling bins with nothing but paper in the last.
Oh my gosh.
Just give you, so we're all down to 1 tear sheet per article because, you know, we've both written for dozens and dozens and dozens of places. And then one day I was working on my Psych Today column and I thought, you know, I have a book coming out in May called Shifting Forward, which is the first 50. Here it is. The first 50 Psych Today columns. And I realized, it's the columns are on their electronic magazine part, not on their printed magazine part. Mm-hmm. And I said to Peggy, who's in my office, I said, oh my God, I don't have any tear sheets with them. It's all like, you know, it's like, wow, I don't have to keep up with, you know, 100 tear sheets, you know, right. It's like all in this universe, you know, but so there's less of that now because there is so much, but yeah, you do have to keep until something, you know, is solid in a book like this or whatever, right. Keep those files and, you know, have somebody, you know, iCloud is nice and it's pretty reliable, but you need a point person who you can send all of your big files to, mm-hmm. and you just ask them to keep them. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't even have to read them. You just say, you know, you send them another file and say, just keep that in my bucket for, you know, you've got a little folder for me. Put that in my folder that you have there. Mm-hmm. They don't, you know, and all they do is they're a second keeper for you along with, with iCloud and whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But you need to, I do at least, maybe because whatever.
Right.
I want to make sure that I don't lose things.
Yeah. And I just love that idea because I think it's so true. Even if you are just doing like a journal article or doing a free write or whatever, you never know when an idea that you had during that free write or in that journal article could be the basis of a magazine article or exactly. could be the basis of a novel or whatever. You just never know where one thing is going to lead. So to have a space where you can keep all of your ideas and things that you've written as like a bank of more ideas is, I love that idea. That's great. Another thing that you didn't really say it explicitly, but curiosity, I feel, is huge for writers because it seems like that's how you really started, is that you were just curious about things that you didn't really know much about, like the sports writing. I think that a lot of writers just, you kind of get narrowed in on like this one thing that you want to be an expert in, or I just want to write about food. That's it. Just food. But if you're curious about how things work, or if you overhear a conversation that makes you curious about, oh, what were they talking about? I mean, curiosity leads again to more opportunities.
Right. That's right. And, you know, I'll tell you a secret. Publishers would really, I have a wonderful publisher, Owl Canyon Press. I love them. And they're very tolerant of me and very supportive of my work. Most publishers want you to have to write the same kind of book over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And if you look at my list of books, you're going to say, who is this person? I get bored easily, obviously. Yeah. And so I write about a bunch of different things and a bunch of different kinds of books. Mm-hmm. And that's fine, you know. And I'm at a point in my career where it's what I want to do.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, certain genres, like romance writers, you know, they are expected by their publishers. I have a very good friend, Amy Jones, who's a wonderful romance writer. And, you know, she publishes under A.E. Jones. And, you know, we just happened to meet, and I've never considered writing romance. And she also writes speculative fiction, with monsters and things in it, whatever. And so we started exchanging books, and we've just had a great time getting to know each other and different genres. Like, she was, you know, not a literary writer, and I was not a romance writer. And so we've both crossed the street on it, and it's been, it's been fun. And it's made me think a lot about changing my attitude about that kind of writing, mm-hmm. and also broaden my sense of, well, you know, what if I had a character who was this, or what if, you know, and Amy's done the same thing.
Which brings me to my next point, Carrie, is another thing that you mentioned that I feel is really important for writers is having the support system.
Yes.
So you have other writers, you have a writer's group, you have, and then that's where the hired, if you need to hire people to help you, but that is a huge part in just, again, freeing up space, helping you generate ideas, and just de-stressing as a writer.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And it's been, I think, you know, it's, well, I know it's been hard for everyone. When I was putting together Shifting Forward, the 50, you know, the first 50 columns, I realized how many of them were about COVID and different aspects of COVID. And I think that sort of isolation, as much as Zoom makes me crazy, and I'm sort of checking my eyebrows and my hair to make sure I'm okay. what a gift. I mean, that we've all sort of learned how to maneuver this, that I can have a conversation with you in California and we can get to know each other and I can connect with you and I can feel like, well, I know Ebony, or, you know, you know me a little bit now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, other than that, it's very isolating. I have to say that, it, you know, writing is an isolating work, and probably there's a certain amount of introversion that comes with being a writer and an ability to be by yourself and to puzzle things out by yourself. However, you also need to have people to talk with about it. And when I talk about writing, I appear to be very much an extrovert. Well, that's a trick. You know, I'm comfortable talking about this, and I can do it in front of a crowd. I can do it one-on-one with Zoom or whatever. But in my heart of hearts, I'm very much an introvert, and I love the research. If you don't love research, do something else, you know, because, you know, and
that's where the curiosity comes in, is through the research. I mean, yeah, you have to be curious to do all that.
Yeah. So.
And then one other thing.
Yes.
Writing takes time, and that's okay.
It is okay.
Yes.
Okay. It's more than okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's the way it is. And the best thing about writing is the more you do it, the better you get at it.
You know, I have to say, I was, I teach high school English, and we, in my 11th grade class, I was actually doing it for all my classes, 9th and 11th, but we went over some class goals, like what do you want to have achieved by the end of the school year? And it was so interesting. This one kid says, he raises his hand, I want to learn how to write an essay in under an hour. I said, what? And then the other kids, like, were looking, and they started nodding their heads, like, yeah, we want to write. I said, is this what you have to do? Because they're also enrolled in college classes at the same time. I said, is this what you have to do for your college English class? And he said, no, but I just, this is something I feel like I need to learn. And the other kids were like, yeah. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness. I mean, that's so much pressure. And I know where that comes from. It comes from when you have timed essay tests, and you have to get, like, a perfect draft out in, like, under an hour. But there was part of me that was like, oh my goodness, but this isn't real.
No, I want to just, not to give a plug about my book, but I want to explain where this came from, which is, and you might want to consider it for your classes. In 2014, I was the North Carolina Piedmont Laureate in short fiction. And I did 40 workshops in 10 months, and put 3,000 miles on my car. But the best thing about that was I was used to lecturing at colleges and, you know, that kind of thing. And all of a sudden, I found myself in front of audiences. The workshops that I did were free, so that made it accessible to lots of people. And people who wanted to try writing without having to put any money on the table for it. And also, you know, it was kind of like they could do it secretively. They didn't have to tell their husbands, whatever. And, you know, they could just give it a try. So I found myself teaching, using my college notes and teaching it, to people who had not been to college, or they had been to college and they were accountants or lawyers or doctors or whatever, and they had never had any English classes. So all my sweet little lectures about, oh, you know, Madame Bovary and blah, 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 went out the window because they hadn't read that. They weren't interested in that. So I had to back up and develop a new system to teach writing. And that's where this writing workbook came. And so it's short chapters and with little painless writing exercises in it, and then prompts. You pick a prompt and then you apply what you learned in that lesson and then you move to the next one. So you learn how to do characterization and plot and, dialogue, where do you put those little things? Mm-hmm. All of that, you learn all those things that maybe you didn't really know. Mm-hmm. And if you worked your way through this book, you would understand how to write by the end of it. And mm-hmm. that's where the book came from, was doing these 40 workshops and trying to figure out, how do I help people have a voice and say what they want to say, discover what their passion is, be able to put it into words, put it on paper, and get it out there in a short time. So that's why the lessons were short. And also give them the tools and the words that they would need, just the difference between I'm a character-driven versus a plot-driven author. If you're mm-hmm. writing a publisher and saying this is a plot-driven book versus a character-driven book, you need to know what that means. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, my mm-hmm. fiction is character driven. It's like whatever the characters do, I'm following them around. Mm-hmm. Plot is, you set up a plot line, blah, 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 and then you force the characters into the plot line, Mm-hmm. So I give you the words, I give you the ideas, I make you smarter about writing by the end of it. And I give you the tools you're going to need to be able to do that. As for doing the 1-hour essay, that's not, that's horrifying. I absolutely agree with you. But that's the world for those kids. Mm-hmm. I have done this a lot. And I have never written a Psych Today piece in an hour. It takes me several weeks because I do a little and I think, no, it's not going in the right direction. Let me, rein that back in and let me go forward. So as my advice to you, Ebony, would be to come up with some prompts, quick discussion, come up with some prompts and let them try that in the class. Give them that. I'm going to give you 40 minutes. Forget the hour. I'm going to give you 40 minutes. And then have them each stand up and read the first sentence. That's the most important thing. Mm-hmm. That, people do not understand. Let me just say one more thing. And like I said, I could talk about this for a long time. What's a good book? What makes a good book? What makes a good essay? So have you ever read a book and you got to the end of the book and you thought, that was a waste of my time? You ever had that happen? The reason is, I can tell you why. If you pulled 5 books from your shelf that you loved and you read the first page and you read the last page, you would see that they come together. The first page is the promise. The last page is the delivery of that promise. And if you've read a book that didn't link those two things together, that got off the track, however eloquently it got off the track, it did not solve, it did not echo what was on that first page. That was an unsatisfying read. And that rule works with whether it's a 500-word essay or a 500-page book. It's the same thing. What does that first sentence tell me? Mm-hmm. Where is that? What is it promising me is going to happen? And it better happen in the end. And if you get to the end and you have a different resolution, you go back and you rewrite that first sentence.
Mm-hmm. That is good advice. Yeah, because a lot of times, especially with students, they'll start off one way and then completely veer off into,
Yeah. Take a mm-hmm. funny left turn. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And the funny left turn is okay. Make them write as fast as they can. Mm-hmm. Just, and choke them up on it and say, give me your first sentence and your last sentence. Mm-hmm. And get them thinking in those terms, that first sentence sets up the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Carrie, oh my goodness. What?
Let's zoom with your class. I'll just make some.
I was about to say, I feel like I just sat in a writing class for about an hour. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much for coming and sharing all of your wisdom with us. This was wonderful. Tell us where we can find you.
So you can find me. My website is the CJANE Work, CJANEWork.com. Mm-hmm. And you can find out all about me, and you can click on all my books, and it takes you to a way to buy them, whether it's through my publisher or online, and you can order them from bookstores, and you can just say, I want this book, because it's distributed, they're distributed by Baker & Taylor, which is, I could spend another hour talking about the whole distribution thing with books, let me tell you. That's a good story. But so you can find me on cjanework.com. And, you know, you could read my column. It tells you how to get to my column with Psychology Today. And let me just say that they approached me, which was the biggest gift I've been given in a long time. And they said, we just want you, we like the way you write. Imagine that. We like the way you write, and we want you to write a column, a once a month column. And you can write about anything you want to write about. And I said, anything? And they said, anything. And I said, really? They said, yeah, really. And I write about absolutely anything that's going on in the world, that's going on in my world, that people are concerned about, that I'm concerned about, that make me laugh, you know, whatever.
Oh, well, that's a wonderful story just to end with right there. I mean, I could go, I just feel like asking you about a dozen questions about that, but that we'll just end it there. Thank you so much, Carrie.
That was such an educational, entertaining, inspiring conversation I had with Carrie. I walked away with two big takeaways. First big takeaway was the piece she shared about curiosity, because it really helped to underscore, for me, it helped to underscore the value of being curious, because you never know how curiosity is going to open up the door to an opportunity or an idea that you never even saw coming. The second thing, my second big takeaway, is what she shared about totally dismissing or throwing away an idea that you have or have had in the past, or an article or story that you've written, because you never know how that article you wrote 5 years ago is going to inform an article or story that you are going to write 2 years from now. You never know how that idea that you thought was pretty worthless or silly that you came up with last week is might be the genesis for an article or a story that you are working on now. I think that's golden, because when the past complements the present, it makes whatever you're working on in the present a lot more exciting and sometimes easier. I've had this happen where I'm currently working on something and then I think, oh, wait a minute, I think I've written something in the past, that post or that essay that connects to what I'm currently working on. And then I start pulling from that article or that post or that essay, and it just makes the current writing process a lot more easier. It's like repurposing old material for something new. So if you want to learn more about Carrie and learn more gems of wisdom from her, then please visit her website, which is in the show notes. And yeah, reach out. In the meantime, you can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Motivation to Write. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'm at Ebony Haywood, and you can sign up for my newsletter at zazo.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you next week when I talk to another fabulous guest. Bye-bye.